Hey team, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Mind Time with Madison, a safe space where we meet with mental health experts, professional athletes, artists, entrepreneurs, and influencers to share stories of mental health experiences and offer you a place to grow and learn together. We're committed to providing conversations that help end the stigma around mental health. We hope you enjoy.
Hi, Dr. Korb. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So we're here to talk about mental health, and I am excited. I'm excited to meet you, and I'm excited to learn from you more than anything.
Yeah, well, hopefully I have something to share.
I would love to hear more about you first, and then we go from there.
Yeah, sure. I've always been interested in science and the brain, just because I've always loved science. But I've also really been interested in what causes stress and what motivates us, because I feel like when I was a kid, I was stressed about things, or I would be really emotional, and I was why is that? And it wasn't until mostly in college when I started discovering neuroscience, I was that has to do with stuff that's happening in the brain. Particularly, why is it that sometimes I could feel really confident and motivated and everything was really easy, and other times you just are stressed and overthinking and doubting yourself? And it took me a long time to realize it has to do with the activity and chemistry of certain brain circuits and certain habits that may have inadvertently wired in there. And some of that stuff you can't change because it's part of having a human brain, and some of the stuff you can change. So I ultimately went and got a PhD in neuroscience while I was coaching the UCLA Women's Ultimate Frisbee team. And and from all of that, I often think I learned more from coaching Women's Ultimate Frisbee than I did from getting a PhD, but I put all of that knowledge together to write The Upward Spiral. And now I teach about it, and I help coach people through putting that information into their lives.
So one thing that you were saying that created a question I think is important, you say certain brain circuitry that you have created and how you internalize things. But how much is it stuff that you have created yourself, whether you know it or not, and how much your life experiences create it? Because, if you're in a plane and it's turbulent and your parents are super scared, then you'll most likely be scared. But if your parents handle that differently, and say, oh, it's so much fun. How much is it your own internal versus what you're perceiving from the outside world?
Yeah. That's a great question. And that's why I think it's so important to understand the neuroscience, because a lot of times people focus on, well, either I have full and total control over it, and so many Instagram and TikTok influencers are you just need to manifest it and send these energy waves out into the universe. And it is great to believe you have control, and you do have some control to change your brain, but you don't have full and total control. And the benefit, sometimes people are it's just these genes that I have, or my, crappy parents. And that is also helpful sometimes too, because it means you stop blaming yourself. Truth is complicated.
In a lot of ways where you're it's my genes, or it's because of my parents, that's, you're saying that to abdicate blame so that you don't have to actually look inward. It makes it easier to look outward when you right. abdicate blame like that.
Right. Well, so it's to say, it's your genes or it's your parents. Like, it is your genes and your parents, in that those, like, there's a study, I think, that shows about, like, science per se, but from a psychology perspective, like, how much of our happiness is under our control, and about 60% of it is determined by things outside of your control, your genes, your previous experiences, stuff that you can't control. And about 40% of it is under your control. And if people look at that and be like, oh, only 40%, well, your automatic focus on how much you can't control, well, that is a mental habit that you could start to change, and that is under your control. But when it comes to things like your genetics and your parents' treatment of you and your, you know, early childhood experiences, it is important to recognize that those things do influence the activity and chemistry of your brain. But the only thing useful to do with that information is to accept it and acknowledge it, and to treat yourself compassionately as a result. Because what most people often want to do, they either want to blame their parents and abdicate any of their responsibility moving forward, or they want to ignore it and say, well, no, that doesn't matter at all. Well, no, it does matter, because it is why you're stuck. But getting mad at yourself or mad at your parents isn't a useful way forward.
Yeah, you know, back to the analogy, you could say, oh, I hate turbulence because my mom was always petrified with turbulence.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. That's why I'm afraid of it. And that's just always the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
Or you could say, this is the reason why I feel this way, but it does not have to be that way. Because it's a, you know, it's a, not a trained, a learned behavior, but it's a emotional response built off of the past.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a learned emotional response. Like for example, your genes give you certain tendencies to develop in a certain way, but those are influenced by your early experiences. Like, for example, the emotion of disgust, like feeling disgusted by something. That's a universal human emotion. But the specific things that disgust us, like the foods that disgust you, like, are wildly different depending on your experiences growing up. And and the thing about the turbulence, like, it's unclear exactly how much control you have over, you know, your feelings going forward, because you might always be uncomfortable in the air, but the fact that you're uncomfortable with turbulence isn't the biggest problem. It's the automatic associations that you have with that
like you're uncomfortable with turbulence, so then you feel this way. Where you could say, I'm uncomfortable with turbulence, but it's good, and I'll always be uncomfortable with turbulence, but it's okay. Instead of, like, you know, you're uncomfortable with turbulence, make a next step that pushes you, you know, the wrong direction. So it's almost the next step. It's not about getting, so you're not uncomfortable with turbulence. It's about your reaction to being uncomfortable to turbulence.
Right. And yeah. Again, the interesting thing is, like, I'm uncomfortable with turbulence, and, you know, the more that you focus on it, it's my parents' fault. Like, well, now you don't like where you are, and you can't control it in any way. And so that just makes you feel more uncomfortable. And but the more useful way forward is to acknowledge, like, oh, it makes total sense why I'm uncomfortable with turbulence, to validate your own experience. Like, oh, well, first of all, to stop denying the fact that you are uncomfortable, to just, like, acknowledge and validate your own experience.
Yeah.
And then to say, like, oh, and it makes total sense why I feel that way. because that's how my mom is. And to recognize, like, that, but the reason why it's usually a problem in your life is that then you're like, oh, and you know, it's going to cause all these problems. And we go on this catastrophizing. And those are just mental habits that you can start to change or refocus on different things. Or you think of yourself as, you know, you're weak and you judge yourself, as opposed to just accepting that, like, oh, yep, this is how I feel. And to refocus on things that you can control or that are more relevant. And then the irony of that is that once you sometimes stop trying to focus, change your discomfort with it, and to say, oh, it's okay that I'm uncomfortable, then it doesn't trigger the same downward spiral. And then you start to be more comfortable.
Yeah. And it's, so what you say there, so it's okay to feel the way you're feeling. And
yeah. And I mean, the irony is, like, whether or not it's okay to feel the way you're feeling, that is the way you're feeling.
Yeah.
So, like, you could be locked in a room and you'd be like, I don't want to be locked in this room. Okay. Now you're still locked in the room and you're angry about it. So, like,
yeah.
that's the problem, the secondary sort of emotional reaction that's sort of automatic. And that is what derails you. If you could just be like, oh, I'm locked in this room. Okay. Well, I'll just wait until someone lets me out. Or like, oh, nobody's coming. Okay, well, then I'm just going to bang against this door as loud as I can. But like, once you accept the situation that you're in, it doesn't mean accepting in some grand way that it will always be this way. But just like, oh, this is where I am and I can't.
I'm here.
Right.
Regardless of how I'm here, I'm here. Okay. What do we do now?
Right. Exactly. And sometimes people can't do that because they're so angry at their parents or they're so angry at themselves for the previous choices that they've made that it prevents them.
I feel like it's so easy to say that I'm not okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to know, qualify what that not okay actually is. Because no matter what you do, whether you compete as an athlete, whether you're a professional in some career, whether you're a parent, whether you're any combination of the human experience, it's hard to qualify because we all feel uncomfortable and we all feel stressed and we all feel not okay at some point. Mm-hmm. How do we qualify whether this not okay is actually not okay and this other not okay here is, well, that's just because my kid tried to light the house on fire putting a shirt in a toaster.
Yeah.
How do you, like, especially, you know, coming from your background in neuroscience, how do you parcel those into the groups that they should as much as you can?
Right. No, I mean, that's a fantastic question. And that ultimately is like when I work. I'm still here. Okay. My phone just decided to automatically start updating something. It's a great question. And I was to say when I ultimately, like, when I work with people in coaching, like, that's essentially like what you're trying to get clear about, that you can think of it as there's this sort of like 2D landscape of the things that are more important to you and the things that are less important to you and the things that you have more control over and your limitations or the things you don't have control over. And if you're feeling stuck or stressed, then you're making a mistake somewhere about the relative priorities of things or you think you have control over something, but you don't actually, and you keep banging your head against the same wall. And so the way forward is simply to like recognize that and then learn like, oh, what are the limitations of a human brain? Because sometimes we're mad at ourselves for things.
But that point I love how you could say that point in a very simple terms. Which is important. I always, I think it's important to speak very clearly. But I think that point you just made, learn how to do it in simple terms, is too, like, how do you actually do it? Because if you're struggling, you're struggling because you can't.
Right.
You're already in.
Right.
So, like, you're struggling.
So,
how do you turn from, I'm struggling and I know it's because I can't, assuming you address it accurately.
Right.
I'm struggling because I can't deal with X.
Right. So, yeah.
How do you, overcome that?
Right. So, one simple way forward is just to slow down your breathing. Like, you might be like, oh, I have the big competition coming up, or like, oh, this thing. Okay, sure. But like, just slow down your breathing, and that changes your physiological balance in your body, which changes the signals going to your brain. It's not about like taking deep breaths as deep as possible. It's just about literally slowing down your breathing, which pushes your brain away from the fight or flight response towards the rest and digest response.
Yeah.
And that's just a little tweak. It's not going to solve everything, but it's a little tweak. Yeah. Other sort of more general things are like, well, just, make sure you're getting enough sleep and getting enough physical activity and getting some sunlight. And like, a lot of times we have, that you're getting enough to eat, or, enough good food. And I love to think about, there's like a Snickers commercial where someone's like angry and upset or whatever, and they're like, here, have a Snickers bar. And like,
yeah.
From your own perspective, you're like, no, I don't eat food. There's something wrong with, terrible with my life. And like, you actually can't know, is there something terribly wrong with your life, or have you just not slept or eaten food? And so oftentimes this first step is like, okay, we'll just take care of the basics. Start hanging out with your friends and going to sleep at a reasonable hour and getting some sunlight and some exercise. And then if it's still a problem, okay, you've at least like eliminated, you've narrowed it down to like, it is a real problem. In the same way, like if you were locked in a room, you start freaking, oh my God, I'm locked in a room, whatever. Okay, well, maybe if I just pulled on the door harder, it would work. Or like, maybe there's a key in here somewhere. And that this, once you realize like, oh, maybe there's a simple solution, you can try that. And oh, boom, maybe there's a simple solution. Or you realize there isn't a simple solution, in which case you're like, oh, great. Like this freeze, like I can stop, I can realize that this is a more challenging thing. And that way, if I had to do something extreme, like bust down the door, I could not, like, there's no way out of it. I have to do that. And we don't care so much about difficulty in our lives or stresses. It's the unnecessary difficulties or unnecessary stressors that cause us so much trouble. If you realize like, oh, there's no easy way to do this, then it frees you up because you stop stressing out about how it's difficult. You're like, oh yeah, it's difficult, and you can just do it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing you said there, which was interesting, I found, talking about going and seeing your friends, going and seeing some sunlight, getting some exercise, and I 100% agree. But what's interesting is when you are not feeling great, when you are feeling challenged or down, or you're feeling confused why your life is going a certain way, you don't know if the challenges you're facing are just normal life or something deeper, why is it that the body's reaction is to make you, at least, again, I'm not a neuroscientist, why is the body's reaction to make you want to go inside, not hang out with people, and eat a whole bunch of chips and chicken wings?
Right.
When the solution do the opposite, but the brain's telling you chicken wings.
Right. And there's a lot of complex reasons why that is. One of them is like, because figuring out what to do in this world is difficult. Like, the world is complex and we have incomplete information. There's like an overwhelming amount of information coming at you at any time. And you have to figure out, your brain has to figure out what is relevant and what's irrelevant. Like, is the fact that like there's a little yellow thing, is that relevant? No. Unless I was like, hey, you get $1 million if you find the yellow thing. What if, like, and so depending on your specific goals and your experiences, certain pieces of information are really relevant, certain pieces are irrelevant, and you your brain has to like sort through all of that. And
so how do you from that point, how do you then, you know, you are, maybe you're very not in a good place because your sorting mechanism is not the most accurate. You know, you're putting too much weight into something that really doesn't matter. But like, when you're lost, that's really hard to like actually, when you feel lost, it's really hard to think like that. It's easy for you and I to talk about it right now, when you're in that place, what do you do? Because it's really easy for you and I to say, oh, well, you just, you know, go get some sunlight, go, you know, that is
well, easy. One of the solutions, by the way, is that usually, this is a question that people ask me all the time, because the way I like to think about it is like, if you're driving down the freeway and like your brakes stop working, they're like, don't tell me to go to a mechanic. Like, what do I do? And it's like, okay, well, there's limited things you can do. Like, I'm in a terrible situation. What can I do? Okay, well, you can, you know, downshift. You can look for a truck off ramp. You can put on the emergency brake. Like, there's limited things you can do. Just like in the moment, you can practice slow breathing. You can label the emotion. That's going to get you off the side of the freeway and stopped. Okay. But most people, they're just focused. And they're like, no, but in the middle of the freeway, what do I do? And then that's not the actual problem. The actual problem comes when you get to the side of the freeway and you're either like, oh, whew, glad that's over. Let me get back on the road. Or you'd be like, huh, that's interesting. That seems to happen a lot. And every other time I have just gotten back on the freeway and I keep coming into the same situation. So like when you're in the immediacy of the downward spiral, like there's limited things you can do. But when you like, you know, just come out of it for a moment, the habits that you create there are the ones that are keep getting you in trouble. And so that's the time when, because that's the time when people are like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not in this emergency anymore. Great. I don't need to see a therapist. Oh, great. I don't need to exercise. Time when you need to make the change.
But I think what's interesting is that people, what I was thinking about when you were saying that is, you know, people, when they're in a major issue, they kind of panic when they don't feel right.
Yeah.
Why? They kind of panic and they don't think, you know, as your analogy, when your brakes go out, you were saying, well, you could, okay, turn the hazards on. Okay. Look for a truck off ramp. You know, that's very, okay, what's the next step type of thinking.
Right.
But when you're not feeling right, it's very, I think we all know, it's very hard to really do that. But then what was interesting is then once you're on the side of the road, then you're like, oh, all right, well, I'm done with this. All right, let's just keep going.
Right.
Where you're not, oh, wait, we should maybe like talk about what happened there, because that was maybe not great.
Right.
We're still alive, which is great, but we should probably talk about that.
Right. And that's like, when you were saying like, why does the brain want to just eat chicken wings or whatever? It's because like, we have so many complexities going on. We have long-term goals. We have short-term goals. And when things are uncertain, the future is uncertain. Like when you're being attacked by a lion, there's no point in thinking about like, what do I want to have for lunch tomorrow? What am I going to do for my career? Like, no, you have to deal with the immediate short term. And the same thing is like when you're stuck in anxiety or depression, like you can't focus on this long-term stuff actually, because the brain regions that think about the long-term are shut down. Like the prefrontal cortex, when you are stressed too much, it stops focusing on your long-term goals because the immediate needs are the short-term survival. And that means the balance of power in your brain has shifted to away from like thoughtful, you know, goal-oriented behaviors and towards habits, i.e. whatever you've done the most in the past, or impulses, which is whatever is most immediately pleasurable. So ideally, you should have a balance of those three. But when something stressful happens and it's too much, your ability to think through like, well, what are my long-term goals? That gets shut down and you instead fall back on, hey, let's do it this way because this is the way we've always done it. And that feels comfortable and familiar. Or, oh, look, there's a donut. And like the dopamine system in your brain is activated more to push you towards what those immediate short-term comforts or rewards.
Yeah, so you're not processing anything long-term and your brain starts to respond to short-term stimuli,
mm-hmm.
a donut. Why do you think the brain over time has developed to do that response?
Right.
We could argue it could have been a benefit the way that we, used to live, but like now in our environment, that's different than the way that brain system was designed to function.
That is,
you know, now you get a donut. We're in the, there wasn't a donut.
So, right.
I feel like,
so you have sort of identified the problem. Like we have these brains that they've been the same for 100,000 years. Like evolution works on a very slow timescale. Our brains haven't evolved, you know, but Instagram has, you know, changed. They change the buttons every time. Like technology has changed, society has changed. And so oftentimes when we're like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. There's not something wrong with you. There's just a mismatch between, you know, your caveman neurobiology and what you're being asked to do. And either you just need to figure out a different way to adapt to that, or just accept that like, I can't adapt and it's successful. But blaming yourself actually is the bigger problem. Like that's what makes the problem worse. If you could just be like, oh, this technology is changing all the time and it's making me uncomfortable. Like, yes, when things are changing rapidly, you're supposed to feel stress, but that's not the problem. The bigger problem is then judging yourself and being, you know, a harsh critic of yourself. And that focuses on things you can't control. And the reason we do that oftentimes is because we've developed habits of self-criticism, which, and it's important to recognize this, that all habits, even if we think they are bad for us, all habits benefit us in the short term. The habit system in the brain that pulls you in that direction to do those things, it doesn't make a distinction between good and bad habits. If something is good for you in the short term, but bad for you in the long term, we would call that a bad habit. If something is good for you in the short term and bad for you, or sorry, good for you in the long term, then we call it a good habit. But all habits benefit you in the short term, even if it's unfortunately just a very, very short term, to help you feel comfortable because it's familiar.
The simple, you know, I'm stressed right now, I need a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
You might feel relaxed and calmer having said cigarette. Now, obviously, that's not a healthy long-term, you know, it's a distraction, but something I think, you know, you could talk about what do you do when when you're having issues and you're not able to properly formulate, your brain is just moving towards those short-term dopamine reactions, having a donut, that sort of thing. You know, there's that, where how do you deal with it once you're there? But also, how do you, from the beginning, how could you build a better system of, you know, contextualizing issues that are happening? Because we could, you know, we can deal with it once you're already, you know, at a certain point, but is there a way, like, if you could work with someone early on, you know, type of thing, before any major issues happen, any major stressors happen, can you build great mental pathways?
Yeah. I mean, that's what essentially parenting is. A lot of parents have this notion that they can protect their kids from stress or having to feel bad. And you can't, nor would you want to, because if you perfectly anticipate all of your kids' needs and you're like, oh, you're hungry, oh, you do this, well, then at some point they're gonna leave the house and go off to college, and then they're gonna have no resilience whatsoever. So the thing about parenting is you obviously want to help your child, but one of the best ways you could help them is to understand how they can help themselves and how they can be resilient. And part of being resilient is learning your own limitations. Part of being resilient is relying on other people. So some parents, they're trying to protect their kids, but they end up, getting rid of a resilience. Other parents, they're like, well, I want them to learn resilience, so I'm just going to be, really authoritarian and strict, and they're just going to have to sink or swim. And that, they run into the problem of but relying on other people for compassion and being able to talk about weaknesses, is one of the things that makes you resilient. So finding that balance of where you can push your kids and encourage them but not try and control everything, and just realize the way to be the best parent is really to manage these ideas for yourself, to get control of your own stress response, and then everything will happen naturally.
It's interesting, when you were saying, when a parent tries to anticipate all stresses and tries to remove all of them, what I was thinking about was, well, if the kid that is never stressed or it never, needs to ask for help, then they've never had any, it's not muscle memory or brain, whatever you call it,
but right.
They've never had that experience of saying something is not right, or this is not right, what do I do?
Right.
Because you've actually never taught them the skill of saying, this is not right, I need help.
Right. Yeah.
I'm trying to eliminate that. But then the opposite is, they have to figure it out themselves. So when they ask for help, you basically say, figure it out.
Right.
So on both sides, and so that middle ground has got to be, obviously ideal, but awfully difficult to,
Well, it's actually not that difficult, because, but the thing that makes it difficult is that we work ourselves into these mental corners that it has to be this way. And the thing that makes it easy is if you yourself were parented in a way that makes you feel confident, empowered, and motivated and safe, then your natural instincts are correct. And if you are feeling stuck and feeling like you're stressed about things, well, and you're like, oh, it's because my parents treated me this way or whatever, well, you just need to work through those issues and then just parent naturally. There's not there's not one correct way to do it, but there's lots of different correct ways. So it's a wide my mom is a psychiatrist, so she likes to describe it as like there's a wide road. So like there are, the problem is only like you end up in the gutter, like all the way in the extreme one way or the other. But you have to sort of know your own tendencies and be like, oh yeah, I have the tendency to be a bit, you know, authoritarian. So like, okay, I need to work on my compassion with my kids. Or someone else might be like, oh yeah, I always hate telling my kids no, and I hate setting limits, and I always like giving them everything. It's like, ah, you, I need to accept my own anxiety about the fact that I can't control everything about my kid. And if I can accept my own anxiety, then I'll be able to, you know, be, you know, help them create a little bit more resilience. But the more that you focus on like, I need to change this feature about them, well, that's not in your direct control. All you can control is like, oh, I need to be okay with their anxiety, or it's not even I need to be okay with it, but just recognize the impact that their anxiety has on me. And by the way, this, since you're an equestrian, I used to ride horses, this is something I always think about in terms of horses, that like when I was younger, I was there was like always some good horses, but like I was a new rider, and you get stuck on the you know, the horses that like don't listen to anything that you're doing. And I was like, why is that? And it took me a long time to realize that like, oh, if you're an inexperienced rider and you get put on like a good horse or a sensitive horse, it's gonna act out all over the place. And you're like, oh my God, why is this horse like acting out and doing those things? It's because like you are totally unaware of what you are doing, of what effect you are having. You're yanking on its mouth, and you're leaning this way, and it is trying to listen to you, but you have no awareness of what you're doing. And so a lot of times this is true in our relationships with other people, whether it's parenting or not. Like you are, if the more you're focused on like, wait, that horse is not having the reaction I want them to have, or that person is not having the reaction I want them to have. I want them to go faster, or I want them to go this way, they're going that way. Like, take a moment to think about like, oh, well, what am I doing that is contributing to that? And a lot of times we don't want to think about what we're doing because we have, again, habits of self-criticism where we're like, but I can't do this. And if I can't do this, then I'm bad or whatever. And it's like, oh, so we need to replace those habits of self-criticism with habits of self-compassion. And a lot of times, like, we don't like doing that because habits that we have, right, we have those habits of self-criticism for a reason. Yeah. They help us a lot in certain contexts to have a sense of control. And the hardest thing to do sometimes is to just feel feelings and just be like, oh yeah, I feel really frustrated and there's nothing I can do about it.
You know, kind of going from horses to people, you could say like, you know, I forgot to take the trash out this morning and my significant other pissed at me because right. I just got to take the trash out. I'll take it out in the afternoon. It's fine. Everything's fine. And, you know, it's easy to think of it that way. But then at the same time, it's like, well, what does not taking the trash out symbolize for the other person?
Right.
You know, I'm not saying it should symbolize that. I'm just saying, like, that's why they're reacting that way.
Yeah.
So if you only focus on it's fine and it shouldn't symbolize that, it's in the point of it already does. So you kind of just.
Right.
You kind of have to approach that problem.
And that's one of those things when I was talking earlier about like this landscape of like things that are important versus controllable, like your relationship with your significant other is really important, but certain elements of it aren't under your control. Like you can't control their childhood and how their parents always yelled at them when they didn't take out the trash. And so like, oh, you didn't mean or whatever, like you didn't mean to do that, but like, okay, that's out of your control. And you can, like, even if it's just a little bit you know, you in your mind, it's just a little tiny thing and they're blowing it out of proportion. In their mind, you're underemphasizing it, and all you can sort of do is acknowledge your own contribution.
Is it easy for humans to do that? You know, because I think a lot of, you know, when I'm listening to a lot of what you're saying, it sounds a lot like, you know, the ancient Greek or Roman philosophy of Stoicism, where, you know, you should only care about what you are directly able to control, and what you are not, you should care about. And, but, so it sounds like that, but like when you're talking to your significant other, how do you have that conversation where you're like, I am doing this because of this, and it might not be, but this is why, and I know you're, you know, I know because I didn't take the trash out this morning, you're irritated with me. Like, you know, that's a hard conversation I think every couple has had, whether it's about the trash or not making the bed or, you know, something very small. You know, your biggest issues, arguments always come from something small, but it's actually not something small, but it seems like that in the moment. So like, how do you have that conversation?
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing, which is one specific word that you've mentioned several times about whether it was stoicism or the other thing, other things, was should. And that's one of the root of a lot of problems. Like, regardless of whether you should feel this way or they should feel that, but like, they do. So like, a lot of times when we use the word should, it actually gets in the way of us being able to focus on, well, what is relevant right now? Because we're like, this shouldn't be relevant. This should, like, well, what is happening? And from here, like, what are my options? Whether my options should be something else or not, like, it distracts from our ability to just focus on what is. So that's one thing. But how you deal with that, you said it's a tough conversation. And actually, even though I've written a couple books, the book that I most recommend is not The Upward Spiral, but is a book called Difficult Conversations, which is about exactly that. And the key message essentially is like, stop trying to tell the other person the perfect right thing. Because we think like, again, because our brains are focused on what we can control. And we're like, there must be some perfect right thing that I can say that'll solve everything. But it's stressful because like, but I don't know what that thing is. And if I say the wrong thing, then these terrible consequences. And so we're stressed out trying to find the right thing to say. When in fact, the answer is like, stop trying to say the right thing. I think in the book they describe it's like you're trying to toss a grenade gently so it doesn't do too much damage. Like, how do I tell this person that they are really overreacting to my taking out the trash in a way that doesn't make them feel upset? And the truth is like, well, when you are having a conversation that seems like it shouldn't be stressful, but is stressful, it means that there are feelings behind that. And there's, you know, automatic beliefs and assumptions going on in both you and the other person. And that's what the whole conversation is about. So the quicker that you can get to that, the easier it is. So stop talking about what happened and about, well, did I take out the trash? Or did you say I should take out the trash? Or whose day was it? Like, and start talking about like, hey, it seems like you're really upset about our, you know, how we deal with the trash. And like, the more that you are eager to listen to the other person, then they're going to stop being so defensive because you're interested in their perspective. Yeah. Whereas the problem we most often run into is like, we think, well, I'm right. I have the correct perspective. And so I just need to tell them how correct I am. And so the way forward is to just acknowledge the tiniest possibility that you're not 100% correct about everything. And if you can just set aside, and it's very hard to do because it feels so good. It releases a lot of dopamine to be right. But if you can just remind yourself, like, ah, well, this person is more important to me. Like, I would love to be right and have this person I love feel good. But in the absence, in this moment, I don't know how to do both of those things at the same time. So I can make a choice. I can choose to try and be more right, or I can choose to help this person that I care about. And you can have usually either of those things. But usually if you choose to focus on proving how right you are, well, you're going to hurt the person that you care about. And
what you said earlier, you were talking about how when you're stressed, you focus more on more immediate.
Yeah.
And I feel like the emotion of wanting to be right is that immediate mm-hmm. dopamine release.
Yep.
Where the long term one that you in that moment kind of you miss is your other person, you know, being happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you can't help but make that mistake many times, right? But what you can hope to do, just like scientists have been doing experiments for, you know, hundreds of years or certain things, and they keep making them the same mistake. And then if with each mistake though, you ideally learn something slightly new. And that's what an experiment is. And through that experiment, we move forward and learn something. And so in your life, you've done certain experiments hundreds or thousands of times in the way that you've had conversations in previous relationships in this current relationship. And you, at some point, you should maybe have a moment of self-reflection of oh, that's interesting. I keep wanting to do this. And you might not do it in the first 100 conversations that you have with someone, or 100, you know, arguments that you have with someone, but maybe in the 101st argument after you've, you know, heard this podcast, then the next 10 arguments you'll have with them, you still won't remember it. But at the end of it, you're like, oh, right, I wanted to think about that. And then maybe in the 150th one, in the middle of the argument, you'd be like, oh, right, what was that thing I'm supposed to? Oh, and just just having that moment of wait, I think I'm supposed to ask them about their feelings, and that doesn't really make sense. But each iteration you do it, each tiny time that you, you know, the first time you'll be in the argument for 10 minutes before it occurs to you, and maybe you, after a little while, that you can remember after 5 minutes or 1 minute. And each time you do it, because it's different than the default, you know, impulsive habit, it starts to create a little new connection that you can strengthen over time. And yes, you, every time you forget to do it and fall back into your own old habits, it strengthens that connection. But you can't help but make mistakes. What was that?
It feels like the neural version of muscle memory.
It is. What we call muscle memory is not in your muscles. It is in the connections in your brain. No, but
easier to say that as just in our muscles.
No, but the reason why that's helpful is this is really useful. Muscle memory is helpful for a lot of athletes to conceptualize what they're doing. If you're taking free throws, you're I'm going to bend my knees, and then I'm going to dribble three times, and I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden, when it's, you know, game night, and there's all these tons of people watching, you're going to forget to that. You're going to lose focus, and you're going to make mistakes. And all you can do is just remind yourself what you wanted to do. And you're still going to make mistakes, but hopefully now you're focused a little bit more on the things that you have control over, because you can't control whether the basket goes in, even though that's what you're focusing on. All you can do is next time I'll remind myself to bend my knees and dribble. And the more that you repeat these actions, the more automatic they become, and it doesn't take so much conscious willful effort. And the same is true, not just of physical habits, but the same is true of mental and emotional habits, that, you know, each time you bend your knees, and each time you remind yourself to bend your knees, like, it strengthens that connection in the brain. And so each time you're in an argument and you say to your partner, like, hey, you sound really upset by this. Can you tell me more about that? Like, it just makes it more automatic. And often the most important person to use these tactics on is yourself. Like, because it's really easy to see. It is the hardest, right? Because it's so easy to lie to yourself. But if you can just, like, just acknowledge that you have emotions, like, oh, I'm really angry because my partner did. You don't even know why, but just to be able to say, like, oh, I'm angry, or I'm stressed, or I'm anxious. It just takes the tiniest little self-awareness that maybe you can scrounge up from, you know, the stress state you're in. But if you can manage to do it, then it activates the prefrontal cortex in a way that automatically calms down the emotional reactivity in the brain. So
you're thinking about a potential that it calms your prefrontal cortex because there's at least an idea that there is a solution, as opposed to just being like,
right. It's not even a solution per se, but it's like acknowledging the situation that you're in. Because when you're like when you're on autopilot, so like when a pilot engages the autopilot, it's a really useful feature. Yeah. Autopilots exist for a reason. Oh, you can stop focusing. And then if the pilot's trying to land the plane and the plane keeps going in the weird, you're like, what's going on? And you realize, like, oh, right. The autopilot is on. Even if the autopilot is stuck in the on position, like, at least, like, okay, well, now I know how to adjust. And it's sort of like that. When you are really emotional, your brain's going to go into these deeper brain regions that are kind of on autopilot. The emotions are going to trigger your habits and so on. Your brain's going to live your life without you. By using the labeling of emotions, you kind of intervene in that process and you'd be like, oh, I'm really stressed right now. And that kind of, like, you know, reins it in a little, like the tiniest bit, so that then instead of being yanked automatically, you know, into your autopilot habits, it's just pulling you really strongly. But now, okay, you can start to take control a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you can continue it.
Hours.
What was that?
I really, right? I feel like we could talk for hours.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's already been an hour. Surprising.
So, I think it's always good to end on something simple.
Yeah.
What is the easy? What? Not easiest. I hate that word. When someone's like, oh, this is not right, what is the best, that doesn't mean it's foolproof, best way for them to come out of their own heads and say, this is not right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that first step is always, I feel like that's the hardest one. I feel like people don't really mess up that much on like the fourth or fifth, you know, once you've already said this is not right.
Right. Well, so even the problem with saying, like, this is not right, or I'm like, this shouldn't be this way, or whatever, like, it's just that you're stuck in the autopilot version of that. And if you can just, like, it's a mindfulness moment, really, of just, like, recognizing that you're stuck. It goes from, like, it shouldn't be this way, it's just, like, I should be able to change this, whatever, and to just, like, have your prefrontal cortex, like, intervene just a little bit, like, oh, I'm angry because it, or, like, I'm thinking that it shouldn't be this way. Like, to just to recognize the situation that you are in. And part of... Right, because, like part of, you know, mindfulness isn't really just about clearing your mind, as many people think. It's just about recognizing your thoughts as thoughts. And so like when you have an emotion or a thought, you're not aware that you're having it. You're just having it. And if you can just be like, oh, I feel angry, or like, I think I'm going to lose this competition. Like, oh, that is a thought that I am having. And that thought is triggering other thoughts and triggering other emotions. And like, and then you're like, oh my God, but what am I going to do about that? And then you're like, oh, I'm upset and I'm stressed because I don't know what I'm going to do about that. Like, and just that tones down, like that awareness tones down the feeling of being in a runaway car. Like it just slows you down a little bit. It is. And this is just one caveat that I want to, that I say to people a lot, because I often talk to clients who are like in the opposite problem. Like they're in a runaway car and they've gotten so good at like talking themselves down that then they're like, okay, well, so then what should I do? Like if you work really good at like calming yourself down, you're like, okay, don't worry about it, whatever. Then like you still care about things, but you're like, now you don't have the ability to know like, well, but what is it that I do want to do? Like, because our stress response is actually really important for not just our survival, but for our excitement. Like if you were riding a horse and you know, you got, you know, you're trying to jump or whatever, and you fall off five times. Well, like, should you get back on, or should you just be like, hey, horseback riding's not my thing, I'm going to do something else? Like, there's not actually a correct answer to that question. It depends on, like, well, what's... What?
Want the, the hard thing is people want, like, well, I feel this way. What? It, okay, granted, some of my questions have been like this. You say, like, I feel this way. What is the solution? And it's hard. It's, you know, it's hard that there are methods, but there's no, like, solution.
That is exactly right. Like, I wrote in the, when I was first writing The Upward Spiral, I think, like, the introduction, I'm basically, like, I mean, it's ostensibly about depression, but that was really more of, like, a marketing choice by the publisher, because it's really about, like, well, how do you change the human brain to be, like, happier and, you know, more productive and more focused? But one of the things that people are keep trying to find is, like, what's the solution to depression? Like, what's the one thing that I can do? And, like, the good news, well, the bad news is there isn't one thing, because your brain is unique and your circumstances are unique, and your particular values and what's important to you and your experiences are unique to you. So science can tell you, and this is the good news, science has done all these different studies of, like, here are the things that tend to work for people to help their brains function, like, you know, sleep and exercise and sunlight and social interaction and self-compassion and gratitude and mindfulness. And, like, there's this whole list of tools that can each help. And what science can't tell you is, for you specifically in this exact moment, like, what combination of these tools do you need to do? And that's an experiment you kind of have to do on yourself. But the good news is you have done that experiment for 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. So just take a moment to reflect on, like, the data that you've already acquired. Like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I keep being hard on myself and yelling at myself that, no, you have to get back on that horse. And, like, to realize, like, oh, I do that because that's been really helpful for me for a lot of things. It's what's gotten me to be a professional horseback rider. Where, like, otherwise I would have given up. But there's no one tool that is perfect in every situation. And to just realize, like, when you reach the, when you are stuck, it is because almost always you are relying on some habit that you consider to be a good habit. That you're like, oh, no, but I should be hard on myself. And to realize, like, ah, maybe just in this specific moment, yelling at myself is not helpful. And that's scary because you're like, nope, but because then you enter unknown territory and you get stressed and you want to fall back on your old habits.
Yeah.
But to realize that there is no one solution, and that is freeing because it helps you, instead of thinking like, oh, there's some perfect solution out there that some expert like Dr. Korb can tell me. And if he could just tell me in this moment what the perfect thing to do was, then I wouldn't have this problem. And if you can just let go of that like, oh, you are actually the expert on you. And so if you don't know the answer right now, that's okay. All you need to do is really do anything that is different than the default of like what exactly what you feel like doing in that moment.
And hard though.
Exactly.
So hard though.
And here I'm going to tell you, I'm going to let you off the hook. You don't have to change at all, because a lot of times people view this as like, I have this bad habit, I have to change it. And that I'm going to tell you, you don't have to do any of this unless there's some part of you is like, but I want to do it. Like, I want to get back on that horse. Okay. Well, then stop telling yourself, the more that you focus like, oh, my parents are going to be so disappointed and I'm going to be so mad at myself. The more that you focus on the things that you have to do and the negative consequences, then the more you suck all of the fun and enjoyment and freedom out of your life. And oftentimes, the things that we feel like we quote unquote have to do and the things that we want to do are the same things. So once you like tell yourself, no, you have to get up back on that horse or you're a total loser. And once you let go of that, you're like, oh, I could get back on the horse or I could go home and watch TV. You're like, no, but I want to get back on the horse because I don't want to be the kind of whatever.
I mean, you changed like three words, but the meaning is completely different in both of those.
Yeah.
And I think that's, it's so simple and I like that.
Yeah, thank you. That's why I love it too. Like, I was trying to understand all this stuff, as I was saying, when I was young, I was like, why do I feel motivated sometimes? Why do I feel stressed and overwhelmed? Because I was never like I played soccer, I played volleyball, I rode horses. I was like never particularly good at any of them. I was like, I tried really hard that's trying really hard and being hard on yourself, like, is sometimes helpful, but like, it also means you get stressed out and, miss shots or whatever. But like, that is what led me into neuroscience, and I got deep into trying to understand everything about how the brain worked. And at some point I was like, oh, I'm trying to go too deep to like trying to predict and understand everything about me. And like, science is really good at telling you about groups of people. And that's, I love doing science, it's interesting. But as soon as you try to take science out of the lab and apply it to you, well, you're a totally uncontrolled experiment. And so you just have to realize like, oh, it's not gonna be perfect. Like, science seems like it can give you, like the allure of it is that it could just give you the right answer.
Yeah, but I get asked by people, so when I'm at horse shows, they're like, well, what's the most important change that you did to get you to where you're at?
Mm-hmm.
And I could probably answer that question, but the problem is there's so many other things I did that the most important thing might actually only be like 7% of the total list of changes that I did. So if you only want the most important, then you're only going to get 7% of the total, instead of saying, what are the list of tools?
Right.
What are the list of things that may work?
Right.
May work. Work a little bit here, work a little bit here. And I think that's a way better question slash answer than how we're used to saying, what's the one thing? And I think science is designed with the way the studies are designed and built to only test one thing.
Right. Exactly.
So then me, who's not a scientist, say, well, then what is the one thing? You know, you've been studying the one thing, so what is the one thing? And in reality, that's a phantom. It's never going to exist ever. You're only testing that one thing because that interjects too many variables if you do it another way, but it's still, you still have to contextualize your work in that one thing
right.
with the totality of tools that a normal human outside of a lab
right.
you know,
yeah.
needs
yeah.
work with.
And the other, like, when someone asks you what's the most important change you made, like, that could be the most important change that you're aware that you made, but probably the most important choices that you made, like, are done, like, they were so obvious to you or automatic to you or someone that you didn't even realize that you were doing them. And, like, the question is, like, okay, like, you don't even know them. Like, and that might be the automatic assumptions that you assume that everyone is doing. Well, of course, everyone, you know, set a goal for themselves, whatever. Like, there's certain beliefs that we have that we just believe that everyone else thinks the same way. And so oftentimes, like, the key thing is to understand, like, as you said, like, what are all the different tools? And, like, oh, am I using them? Or, like, how are they helping me? Or how are they getting in the way? And I always think, even though I talk about neuroscience a lot, it really comes down to understanding yourself better
yeah.
and what is important to you and what's less important to you. And, you know, is your family more important than horseback riding? Is winning more important than doing your best? Sometimes those are the same things, but, like, hey, if I can't win, would I still want to do my best? Like, yes, no, like, and, right, like, that it comes down to, like, different people have different answers and
yeah.
different people have different limitations and including, you know, physical limitations or limitations based on their experiences or beliefs or whatever, and the only thing to do with those limitations is to acknowledge and accept them. Like, I've accepted the limitation. My kids are yelling in the background now, but
Are they yelling?
They're, yeah, I don't think they're yelling for me yet, but I should, that's probably a sign that my time is up.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all your time. It's been really interesting for me personally and hopefully for everyone that sees this to, you know, to listen to everything that you have to say. And it's, you have a great value to give, and it's so fun and interesting to talk to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really interesting to talk to you. I think you have a lot of great insights, and you know, I love talking with people who are interested in about this stuff as well. So look forward to chatting again.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Thanks so much for watching this episode of Mind Time with Madison. Don't forget to check us out on Instagram at myteam.social and on our website at www.myteam.org. See you next time.